Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we begin a new series where we'll be checking in with small town newspapers, and we're doing this about once a month. We start with the Millard County Chronicle Progress. We're going to be talking with reporter Matt Ward. And recent headlines have talked about data centers proposed in Millard County, a peaker power plant with some environmental concerns for some residents. Fire, of course, we had the still ongoing Widemouth 2 fire in the eastern part of the county, and then potential flooding concerns. We'll talk about a golf course and getting water at that golf course. So very timely things happening in Millard County, and we bring in Matt Ward. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate the invite.
I'll just give a personal note here. Millard County is kind of my ancestral home. My mother grew up in Hinckley.
And that's where I live.
You live in Hinckley. Yeah, great place. Loved all the old trees there. It's a beautiful tree-lined place. My grandmother grew up in Oak City, for example. So if you're a Wright or a Christensen in Millard County, I'm probably related to you. So that's but that's not why we chose Millard County Chronicle Progress to start. Yeah. You guys are doing great work out there. Let's talk about the newspaper itself. I'm reading from the newspaper here. The newspaper started in 1910 in Delta area, late 1800s in Fillmore. And then I guess those two papers joined.
Yeah, I believe they joined, I want to say, in the 60s or 70s. It's funny, on the west side of the county, whenever anybody talks about the newspaper, they refer to it as the Chronicle. But on the east side of the county in the Fillmore area, anytime anybody mentions the newspaper, they refer to it as the Progress.
Okay. So, that's great. Yeah. Millard County, not huge. What's the big cities are Delta and Fillmore. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, square miles, we have a ton of property, obviously.
Right.
A lot of land. A lot of it federally managed. Our population's only about 13,000, mm-hmm. maybe a few hundred and change. So not a very big county as far as population goes.
So I mentioned Delta, Fillmore. Fillmore's, of course, right on the I-15.
Yeah, I'd say Fillmore has probably about 1,000 people mm-hmm. in it, and I'd say Delta has about double that.
Yeah. And towns like Kanosh and Holden and Oak City, I mentioned, and
Hinckley,
sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're small towns with a few hundred people. They have their own town councils for the most part. We generally try to cover the Delta and Fillmore much more closely than the small towns. Inevitably, though, there will be issues that come up that require our attention, especially water infrastructure seems to be a persistent issue here. We have a lot of old infrastructure in the ground, and not a large enough tax base to really improve it much. Hence the large amount of industrial development taking place, raises both consternation from some of the locals, but also some enthusiasm, some excitement for some change and growth around here.
Yeah, yeah. It's always, rural areas always looking for economic boost. What are the big employers in the area? What are the big economic drivers right now?
Oh, I think Intermountain Power Project continues to be the largest taxpayer, basically one of the largest employers outside of government. We have a new natural gas and green hydrogen plant that was recently completed. We did lose a few hundred employees from that transition from our coal units to natural gas. But the state has worked very hard to try to keep those coal units open and operational. And so there is a possibility that by the fall, we find out that those coal units will be sold to a new entity, and that entity will have to hire a few hundred people, I imagine, to operate that unit. And so that, that's kind of on the horizon, but IPP continues to be the largest employer around here. That provides the most economic kind of heft on our tax base.
A lot of farming, I would guess.
Yeah, I would say agriculture is probably right mm-hmm. there next to it. I forget what the actual statistic is. It represents somewhere around 30% mm-hmm. of the local economy.
And as you mentioned, just about any place you go, government on various levels is going to be a big employer.
Yes, and our school district is obviously a very large employer. You know, we have two high schools, multiple elementaries, a couple middle schools. And so I would say our school district is a big employer. Our county government and city governments, town governments, I think, have you know, offer a lot of employment. You know, small business growth isn't great around here. We don't have a whole lot of new small businesses. What we do have, you know, when it comes to small business, a lot of food trucks, you know, a lot of people trying different things, new restaurants occasionally come and go. But other than that, I know that the cities themselves are focused on luring in more business, medium sized to large.
I'll just give a shout out to the Car Hop Drive-In in Fillmore.
Whenever
I'm traveling to St. George, make a chance to make a point to stop in there and get their blue cheese, you know, burger.
Yeah. They changed ownership recently. I want to say last year. I haven't been since they've changed owners, but the owner also has a new business next door, which is very interesting. It's a 24/7 simulated golf place where you can basically sign up for a membership and go play golf in the middle of the night. And it's computer simulated, so you can choose which courses you play. So that's kind of interesting. So there's a new fire station going in right near there for Fillmore. So that whole little corner of Main Street is going to see some new life here in the next couple years.
Yeah, that's nice to revitalize Main Street. Of course, on the far ends of town are kind of some chain restaurants and such, but
we have some truck stops, you know, some new truck stops have come in and really taken advantage of the access to I-15. You know, I think there's a new hotel planned for Fillmore. The thing with Fillmore right now, though, is with any new development, they're very concerned about water. There's a water management plan in the works. It's been delayed, I think, for about a year. But there's a water management plan in the works that really has Fillmore city officials nervous because depending upon the cutoff date on the water rights, the city is at risk of losing up to, and I mean, this is pretty crazy, 2/3 of its culinary water rights, depending on where they have that cutoff date, which is, you know, how these management plans work. They pick a date, and any water right newer than that date, you've lost your rights to that water as part of a management plan to rebuild the aquifer, which has been drained by agriculture in that area. Over-allocated, caused some problems in the 90s when the state engineer identified it as a significant problem. The farmers rallied and politicized the idea of managing that basin. And so the state engineer left and said, okay, we won't institute this management plan. Well, here we are 30 years later, and they have to. They have no choice. Mm-hmm. This aquifer has been depleted so much. The water has been mined so much. I mean, a lot of the old folks will remember Clear Lake out here in Millard County, you know, which stretched for miles and was a huge haven for ducks and waterfowl that would migrate in and out of the area. And that lake is essentially gone. That lake is essentially a couple of ponds now. That really illustrates how much water has been mined out of that basin. And so that's a significant problem for Fillmore, because when they don't want to bring in large scale industry or business promising them water, access to water services, if they have no idea if they're going to have those water rights in the future.
What's the status of the management plan? We're just getting started, or
one of the longtime guys in the state engineer's regional office in Richfield recently left, from what I understand, and the new folks who have taken over his position kind of want to reinvent the wheel. One of the first steps in any of these management plans is to prove up the water rights with an audit to make sure there's no illegal diversions that might be historical or traditional, but still illegal, and they want to They basically want to figure out a roadmap to, okay, where can we start reducing water consumption in this basin? Let's start with the ones that shouldn't be diverting this water from one pivot to another first. So I know they're deep into the weeds in that audit, that water right audit, but it has not been completed as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I know. And so the most recent information I heard was from a Fillmore City councilman who is, you know, keeping tabs on that whole process, who says that he's been told now that that is probably a year or two out now. When we should have, I expected to see a water management plan in place by now. Because I think these discussions were not, they were began more than a year and a half ago. And so, but these plans are long-term plans, you know. I mean, I will probably be dead and in the ground by the time this actually gets instituted. And I think most people around here will be. I think if you look at some of the other water management plans around the state, you know, they really don't go into full effect for sometimes 80 years. And so I don't think Fillmore has any immediate problems, but like I said, they don't want to kick the can down the road anymore because they recognize that they may be promising services that they can't provide.
So if the aquifer is pretty much drained, where are farmers and others getting their water?
Well, over there, it's all groundwater. It's all groundwater. And the state engineer and some of their geological folks have started seeing pretty significant soil subsidence in places like Kanawha and parts of that basin. And that is what has spurred this action now. I think some of these farmers are probably a little nervous. I think the value of water rights around that area are going to go through the roof. I think municipalities and some of those small towns are going to have to really start figuring out how to acquire new water in the short term. I don't know exactly how this plays out. I just know that a lot of officials on the east side of this county are very concerned about it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, more with Matt Ward. He's a reporter for the Millard County Chronicle Progress. We're checking in with small town newspapers, starting with Millard County Chronicle Progress. A lot going on in Millard County, including fire, potential flooding. And when we come back in the next segment, we'll talk about two data centers proposed for Millard County. Support and opposition to this is a hot topic, and two of those have been proposed for Millard County. We'll have more following this brief break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're checking in with the Millard County Chronicle Progress. We're starting a new series today. We'll be checking into small town newspapers, getting flavor of what's going on around the rural parts of the state. And we're going to do this about once a month, starting with the Millard County Chronicle Progress. We're talking with reporter Matt Ward. Let's talk about data centers. Of course, a hot topic in northern Utah with this mega data center approved for Box Elder County. Two data centers, I guess, are proposed for Millard County. Let's start with Creekstone. Tell me about this one, this data center. What's the scope of it?
Well, this is about an 1,100-acre campus. They're planning to stack about, I think their long-term plans call for, you know, 20 to 26 individual buildings, individual warehouses. They're permitted. They have just completed tying into the Kern River pipeline here for natural gas. Their first three buildings should be completely run off natural gas, but they also are permitted for, I believe, up to 5,000 or thereabouts acres of solar. So they'll do some renewable power generation as well. They're also, you know, from by all accounts I can discern, is they're among the front runners for acquiring IPP's 40-year-old coal units. So, you know, burning coal might be a part of their energy mix at some point, which is very interesting. They're the biggest news lately with them has been this movement that seems to be well received in Delta City, at least by city officials, is this movement to, instead of digging their own water well out there, because their claim is they're not using any water to cool these data centers. They're not using any water in the power generation. It's going to be a closed loop, sort of glycol cooling system. They're even claiming now that they're partnering with the University of Utah to institute a technology that will actually capture water vapor off of the natural gas generators they plan to run and will be a net producer of water, which is intriguing, obviously, to a lot of people around here. But recently, there's a movement afoot to actually annex Creekstone into Delta City. Now, Creekstone's campus is about 6.5 miles southeast of Delta. And these cities don't really, there may be state law that governs how you annex. And I believe you cannot annex an island. You can't have an island in your municipality. And so this will be somewhat of a peninsula, what would have to be a rather large peninsula. If they were to annex Creekstone into the city, there would just be this 6 mile long corridor where Creekstone is offered to put in infrastructure like water, sewer, that sort of thing, which could really be a boon economically for Delta City because infrastructure has been the persistent problem here is investing in infrastructure. The ability to invest in infrastructure and maintain it has been a real issue here. And so Creekstone is willing to fork over the dollars to install this infrastructure. And Delta City is seriously looking at this as a real possibility because then you have this whole trunk line, you have this 6 miles of open space that can then be developed by other industry. And Creekstone's willing to do that. So that's the latest buzz with them around here.
Because if you talk about economic development, obviously that would be a boon. Hopefully, attract other industry is what their hope
Yes.
would be. I guess a tax base, right?
Huge tax
And
base.
jobs. Would this provide jobs?
They've given some figures on jobs. I think total build out is a few hundred jobs. I don't think it's astronomical. I think that's actually been one of the kind of the selling point for our county has been that we don't want to bring in dirty, polluting industry and all of these new people. 5,000. There's been talk there was talk recently of a nuclear life cycle innovation type park. And Millard County was one of the places that the state was thinking about offering it to. And our county commissioners were like, hey, that's a great idea. We like the tax base. We like everything that you're proposing, except we don't like 5,000 new people moving here overnight. We couldn't handle it. We don't have the housing. We don't have the services to deal with that kind of population bump. And so they were like, please find somewhere else. And of course, that ended up going to Tooele County now.
And I noticed, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and so the selling point for our county with these data centers has been not only are they a boon for the tax base and it can greatly expand it, but there's not going to be a huge jump in population as a result, in their calculation.
Now, I noticed reading one of your stories on this, a Delta City Council meeting, one of the attendees just brought up this issue. Have we thought through housing for any, even though it won't be huge, have we thought through some of these other attendant problems?
Yeah, there is a development underway. I don't know how far it is. I think it's still in the discussion phase only. But there is a group out here that wants to build a very large man camp sort of near the golf course in Delta. And they would like to house construction workers. Once these data centers get really going and the construction phase is underway, they're gonna need some housing. And this man camp idea has kind of come to fruition. I've seen some pushback on it from folks who live around the golf course. They're not too enthused about it. But the fact is, these construction workers, they, you know, a lot of them are going to be bussed in, just like when IPP was under construction. This IPP renewed this new power plant. A lot of these folks just lived out of the area and bussed in every morning. So I think there'll be some of that. But this man camp looks to be something that Delta City is seriously considering. Okay.
What has been public reaction? What I guess maybe start with opposition. Is there opposition, and what are the what is the public saying? Their concerns about the Creekstone plant.
We do have a group of vocal citizens who have been at every meeting, who have their own Facebook page, who get together. They study the issues. They ask pretty hard questions. Some of them. I think Creekstone in particular has gone out of their way to make themselves available, be really transparent with what their plans are. They've hosted a number of public events, from a movie night at our local movie theater to, I think they bought some baseball mounds for one of our little league teams. They've bought a sound system for Delta City to use outdoors. I mean, they've been really trying to really unleash a public relations campaign that sways people to, you know, that they're not the boogeyman. They're not here to change anything. They're just here to develop a business and be a member of the community. And they've been really good. I think their messaging campaign has been somewhat effective. I think a lot of these folks remember when IPP was first built in the 80s, in 1986, I think is when it opened. And, you know, that was a years-long process, you know, involved a lot of water being bought, a lot of land being bought, there was a lot of public upheaval then. But it turned out to be a real financial boom. This county would not be the county it is today without IPP. That's just a fact. And I think the old timers around here recognize that, and recognize that the same hand wringing that's going on with these data centers went on when IPP was being discussed back in the early 80s. And it ended up being a good thing for the county in the end. And so I think there's a lot of that too, that's balancing out some of these more negative voices that are going, hold on, let's just give these folks a chance and let's see what this is really like. Now, we have a second campus that has been less involved in any public messaging around their project, but they're equally as important, I think. And they're taking 4,000 acres of agricultural land. They've rezoned it to heavy industrial. They're going to build multiple campuses within their campus with 3 to 4 to 6 buildings in nodes around this 4,000 acres, which currently is called Triple C Farms. It's a farm, and it's been there forever. So that project, that's permitted. That's going to hook up to Kern River Pipeline here in the next 6 months or so.
This is the Jewel project?
This is the Jewel project. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll break some news for your listeners. There is a third project that I've been able to somewhat, it's a wishy-washy confirmation. So it's not anything I've put in the paper yet, but it's the rumor mill is definitely spinning yarns about a third project. And I've confirmed that there is a third applicant seriously interested in siting another data center campus here. I think there is, you know, we've seen some political backlash, including, I believe one of our county commissioners lost her reelection campaign. I know that she believes she lost her reelection campaign because of her vote to permit these data centers. And so I don't know if there's a threshold where the straw breaks the camel's back with the residents here. It'll be very interesting to see if there's a third campus that comes, whether that's a bridge too far for both our politicians who've now touched the hot stove with this topic, and the public, who obviously has some legitimate concerns. You know, noise, pollution, water use, electrical rates, all of that. Those are legitimate concerns. And so it's been very interesting to dive into that topic. I'm not a computer expert. I'm not a data expert. I think some of these projects have been done very well, and some of these projects have not gotten their messaging correctly. And it's caught politicians by surprise, which is probably the most fascinating thing to me as a journalist, is how they didn't see this freight train coming as far as the public reaction. I think Kevin O'Leary and his Box Elder project didn't do anybody any favors in that data center space here in Utah. So I could see us retreat a little bit from this until we have proper, you know, guardrails in place, regulations. You know, there's no regulation. I mean, the state legislature, even this week, I think there were three committees, interim committees meeting to go over, you know, do we have gaps in our regulations that we need to fill before we permit all these data centers to come in, you know? And so I think that's the next step. We'll probably see some data center regulation and a lot of conversation up on Capitol Hill this legislative session.
So it sounds like local government officials, city councils, I guess the county commission, whatever, seem to be obviously in favor. They're permitting these, at least the two big power plants. These are quite large. So I guess they're obviously weighing economic benefits over, and they're not as concerned as some of the citizens, I guess, about air quality, right? Grid problems, water problems, potential problems.
Yeah. A lot of those issues, you know, there's a lot of, like, air quality, for instance. You know, our airshed has, you know, a giant natural gas plant that's currently in operation. We have that peaker plant in Holden that's being proposed. There's going to be hundreds of Caterpillar generators powering these data centers at the beginning. And so it's going to be interesting to see what kind of air quality issues, if we have any, from that. But, you know, our local officials are quick to point out that, hey, that's all regulated by the state. We don't have anything to do with air quality permitting. You know, we don't have anything to do with a lot of these water issues. Those are state issues. I think for our local officials, they see this as a financial shot in the arm that probably comes around once in a generation. And while they're nervous to take the step forward, they also recognize that in a lot of ways they're powerless. These are coming whether we like it or not, is a message that I've heard more than once from officials. And that tells me personally that a lot of this is coming from the top down. This is being pushed by the governor's office, the legislature. And our county officials, of course, see the economic benefits and go, hey, we can jump on board with this. And I think these developers are very good at selling these projects. And like I told you earlier, I think, you know, there's not going to be a large population boost from this, but there will be a large property tax boost and a large, you know, expansion of the tax base, construction jobs and sales tax revenue and all the things that come with these types of developments, large scale developments. And so I think that's why they're on board. They see this as a way to kind of harness a technological future for this really tiny rural area. Some of the negativity associated with these centers in other parts of the country, I haven't really seen. We've seen some vocal voices. We have had some out-of-towners come in and try to tell us about the dangers of data centers, but a lot of it's fallen flat because they're not from here. They weren't here during the public meetings, which we had many, 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 many meetings, and lots of transparency, lots of opportunity for public comment. And then we've had some out-of-towners kind of come in and poo-poo on everything and say that we're making a mistake, and residents don't know what they're getting into. And a lot of that's fallen flat in large respects. And that's interesting to me, where in other places, it seems like the backlash is just growing week by week, you know, to the point where some states are putting in moratoriums on these things. And so the political backlash is real. But I think that we've been pretty mellow when it comes to that. We haven't seen a whole large amount of protest yet.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for telling us about those. And that's interesting. You did mention in one of these pieces, the Box Elder project. And of course, a lot of backlash to that one, but that doesn't seem to move the needle a whole lot in public opinion in Millard County.
I just there it's just like comparing apples to oranges to me. I think the way the Box Elder data center project kind of came about is a lot different than the ones here. You know, here they went through a pretty regular public process where the first step is I want to buy this property, I want to rezone it, and I want to develop these data centers. Well, you have to go through a planning commission phase, a county commission phase, a permitting phase that sometimes will take you back to the planning commission and then back to the county commission. So we've done this multiple times with both of these projects. Whereas Box Elder, it was sort of this military industrial development authority, you know, a quasi government, entity, sort of forced the issue on the Box Elder Commission. Box Elder commissioners were left out of the loop. I mean, that didn't happen here. If it had gone down that way here, there would be a lot more debate here. But I think this has been a fairly transparent process. The only thing that hasn't been transparent that bothers me a little bit is we don't know who's going to lease these buildings. We don't know who the tenants are. And that's created some stir around here because we're not sure who our new neighbors are going to be. It's not going to be these developers. They may own the buildings, but the tenants are the ones who are really our new neighbors. Is it Oracle? Is it Amazon? Is it Meta? Is it the government? Is it somebody we don't know? Palantir? Who is it? We don't know. Is it a combination of all of them? I've heard multiple rumors to the effect, but these are all, you know, signed and sealed under non-disclosure agreements, and I haven't been able to penetrate that yet.
Let's do one more sort of in the area of power before we go to another break. Then we'll come back and talk about the fire and potential flooding in Millard County. By the way, we're talking with Matt Ward, reporter for the Millard County Chronicle Progress. So here's the headline: County planners vote to okay UAMPS peaker plant zoning near Holden, just not all of it. So a peaker plant, I guess that's what it's in the name. It's designed to provide power during peak usage.
Exactly. It's actually a very high cost, per kilowatt hour, per megawatt hour, whatever quantity you want to put it in. It's a very high cost, actually, power source. But the problem is that, a few years ago, a lot of UAMPS communities, UAMPS itself, saw some of its power sources shut down, some of its planned future sources. Those plans came to n nothing, and so they're kind of in a scramble to build a source that's their own, that's funded by their members. And if you don't know, UAMPS is just the Utah Association of Municipal Power Sources, and they provide power to, I believe, I forget how many members they have. I want to say it's in the 60s. They have lots of members. Usually these are communities who purchase wholesale power through UAMPS and sell that power back to their residents. So they effectively are their own municipal utility. And so a few years ago, when wholesale energy prices just went haywire for like the better part of a year, it caught a lot of our small rural communities, including Fillmore City, off guard. Fillmore City, I believe, spent $1.4 million outside of its regular budgeted electric utility fund because of the price fluctuations, the crazy price fluctuations on the wholesale market. And so UAMPS has really tried to work to fix that, so that it doesn't happen again in the future. And part of that plan is to build this peaker plant in Holden. It would be a natural gas fueled plant. It would basically be, imagine a huge car engine, a piston engine. They would have 10 of these giant piston engines running off natural gas that could be turned on and turned off very quickly. That's the other thing about a peaker plant that's advantageous is that you can power it up and power it down a lot faster than a normal power plant. And so this peaker plant would be available when there's wild price fluctuations and the market's crazy and wholesale sources aren't available. And we're, you know, experiencing peak demand on the grid. Well, you can power this thing up for the few hours it will take until demand starts to subside as the day goes on, you know. And so that's the plan. They originally had this parcel of property that they were looking at very close to Holden. And they had a public meeting in Holden a few months ago. And there was a lot of negative comments from residents there. A lot of these small town utility guys showed up to say, hey, we really need this plant. And hey, this helps your neighbors. And hey, this is the best place, most economical location we can find. Please support us. And a lot of them didn't, even with that explanation, that sort of discussion. So they've moved that location a little closer to McCormick, which is a small area outside of Holden. And even there, there's been some pushback from local ranchers and grazers. And a lot of it's about water. It's always about water out here, especially in that part of the county. And of course, these people are talking about they're not going to drill a well. They're not going to need municipal water. They're going to haul their water in. But there was a memorable comment made about possibly buying water from local ranchers. And some of the local ranchers just started laughing. I mean, they don't have enough water. They're not selling any of their water to anybody. So that's been in the news lately. And they want to get this done fast. The hiccup they ran into with our planning commission a few weeks ago is that they wanted to rezone, I believe, over 300 acres, heavy industrial, even though the plant's only going to sit on 65 acres. So what is that other couple of hundred acres zoned heavy industrial right outside of the small town of Holden going to be used for? And that raised everybody's concerns. And they were like, okay, well, we'll give you that 65 acres. You know, we'll rezone that for you. But we don't want to rezone 300 acres over there to heavy industrial, particularly when we just rezoned 4,000 acres nearby to heavy industrial. And, you know, that you hear a common thing among the agricultural folks here is that Millard County continues to lose more and more of its agricultural land as more and more of these projects come in. And it is true.
Let's take another break. We'll come back, talk about fire and potential flooding in Millard County. We're talking with Matt Ward, reporter for the Millard County Chronicle Progress. More following this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're instituting a new series today. We're checking in with rural newspapers in Utah, and we're going to do this about once a month. We start with the Millard County Chronicle Progress, and we're talking with reporter Matt Ward. Early in this hour, we covered data centers, a peaker power plant. We're going to be talking about fire and potential flooding. A huge fire, of course, mostly in Millard County. Matt Ward, one more thing, I guess, maybe a couple more things on data centers and power plants. I'm a little surprised to hear you characterize this as a mixed, opinion, maybe not as much concern about air quality. So it's a lot of natural gas, right? So this is the Intermountain Power Project powered by natural gas, these two data centers, huge data centers powered by natural gas, and this peaker power plant, natural gas. That's a lot of emissions. Granted, it's not a bowl like some areas in Utah. It's wide open space, but I guess not huge concerns among the public about air quality.
Well, I know with the Jewel Project, one of the reasons they developed their campus to be a series of mini campuses, where there's sort of six building nodes spaced apart, probably hundreds of acres, is because of the concern over the airshed. And so our locals are so used to having IPP and the coal units burning, which, you know, they shut down last year. But our locals are sort of used to living in an area that, you know, has a power plant, holds a coal power plant. So there is some air quality issues, not necessarily for us, for other parts of the state. As far as these natural gas, generating equipment that the data centers are planning to install, they are going out of their way to really suggest to us, to really tell us that they have a handle on air quality issues and that they're going to make every attempt to ameliorate those issues by, like Creekstone partnering with the University of Utah to develop this new technology to sort of harness the exhaust from these generators. I don't know that Juul necessarily has a plan that they've made public yet, but I know they've told the public that they've done environmental studies. They've drilled test holes into their property. They're not willing to make those studies public just yet, I guess. And I don't think that because they're a private entity, I don't think they're required to. They might have to share those studies with the state, though, and regulators. But I imagine Juul will make every effort to do some sort of carbon capture, some sort of pro-environmental initiative. I know that the whole natural gas thing is part of this first phase, but that they're, once you get multiple phases in, they would really like to use a mix of power that's more renewable than fossil fuel. And there's been a lot of talk about harnessing nuclear energy here. I think we all know about Valor Atomics and their stackable modular nuclear reaction project that they're working on in Emery County. I could see some of that maybe happening here, these small modular reactors. I think a lot of people probably aren't aware, but we are going to be the state's best resource for geothermal energy, I think. I think we have one of the hottest test holes they've drilled anywhere, is right here in Millard County. I know that Stittler's meeting today, in fact, to open up another several thousand acres to geothermal exploration. I think there's going to be a marriage at some point between these data centers and geothermal, along with solar and some of these other renewables. And that's going to be down the road. And I think the airshed at that point, you won't see as much natural gas burning. But, I don't have a crystal ball either. I don't know what that's going to look like. But air quality issues, I don't hear as much about air quality as I do about water concerns mm-hmm. and noise concerns. I hear more about noise. Noise has kind of cropped up here lately because there's, people are reading stories from other parts of the country where these data centers are being developed. And one of the persistent claims is that, if you live anywhere nearby, you're going to hear this thing 24/7. So I'm curious there was a long discussion during the permitting process for these about decibel levels and there were claims made that this will be nothing bigger than a truck riding past your house. You won't really hear it. So we'll see if those claims bear out.
Yeah, interesting. We'll see how this plays out. And as you've said, maybe a third data center, that's a possibility, yes. I imagine. Let's talk about the fire, Widemouth 2 fire, huge, huge fire, 93% contained now. You said that's great news. A couple people died in a helicopter during this, right, unfortunately. Maybe just give me a scope of this huge fire.
Well, this thing started with a lightning strike that day. I believe it was a Sunday. It was July 27th, and there were actually multiple lightning strikes that evening prior. That started a bunch of very small fires, most of which were put out. This one, they were not able to extinguish fast enough, and it just took off south of Kanawha, ran right up into the town limits. They evacuated a few places. A funny story, one of the residents, pretty much the only resident really affected in Kanawha, refused to leave. So they just left him there. I mean, if he refuses to leave, what are you going to do? But it started ripping toward the east side and got into the foothills of all the mountainous area around Kanawha, Meadow, Fillmore, and just took off. Burned into Sevier. Before they really got it under control, it started burning south. There was some really erratic fire behavior that surprised a lot of folks. So it was a very hard fire to fight by all accounts. You know, we did have that tragic helicopter accident. Luckily, in my view, you know, in compared to the damage that the Cottonwood fire did south of us in Beaver County, we dodged a bullet in Miller County. We have not lost a lot of property. I think we lost a few cabins, an RV, some cattle. I'm not sure how many head of cows we ranchers lost out there. I know the governor offered them assistance in applying for low interest loans or no interest loans to sort of recoup those losses. But other than that, we haven't lost a lot of real property. And except for the two helicopter pilots, we haven't lost any lives, which is very fortunate in my opinion, because this was a seriously crazy fire that was exhibiting behavior that a lot of these guys, like I said, it took them by surprise. It was pretty shocking fire behavior. At one point, this thing was spotting a third of a mile. This was projecting so much heat, it was sparking, you know, little mini fires a third of a mile away from the fire line, which is pretty crazy to me. But these guys did get it under control. It's at 93% containment. It has burned a large swath of Fish Lake National Forest. I know a lot of our hunters are going to be affected this hunting season. A lot of them are going to get refunds on their deer tag, that's for sure. I know the big concern now is flooding. You know, that's always a big concern with these burn scars. But another concern that a lot of people may not be paying attention to is that, you know, our watershed for East Millard comes out of those foothills and those mountains. You know, we have Chalk Creek over there. We have Pine Creek over there. You know, we have some spring fed water sources that are part of the municipal water system. And, you know, that's why when you saw that flood in Beaver, it contaminated this city's water supply. And that concern is shared by Fillmore City right now. They've done a lot of work putting up barricades and filling sandbags and getting heavy equipment in there, making sure our catch basins up in these foothills are in place and ready to catch anything that's coming off that burn scar. I think they've already dodged a couple of bullets. We've had some monsoonal moisture come in, but it rained harder in Delta and Hinckley than it did in Fillmore, which is really lucky for Fillmore. And so we haven't seen the flooding yet. I know spring runoff is a major concern over that burn scar. So if we get a heavy, you know, snow-filled winter, spring runoff is going to be the next concern. But right now, I know they're up there shoring up our watershed, making sure that we're not getting a lot of debris running into these creeks that then run into the towns, and that can infect the water supply. That's the major concern right now. That and, you know, the county and the towns have all signed on to an interlocal agreement to basically, you know, monitor the work they're doing, in-kind work they're doing, equipment purchases they're making, any steps they're taking to mitigate these flood risks, the federal and state government will reimburse us for. Probably not 100%, but it'll be close. It'll be enough. I assume, you know, I was here for the last major wildfire in that area, which was the Halfway Hill Fire, which was human-caused. And that created the same environment that we have right now. And I know that fire cost Fillmore City, I think, had to lay out about $500,000. I think the county matched it with $500,000. But I think they were eventually made whole. I think it took some time because there's a real bureaucratic process, paperwork process to get reimbursed by the feds. So it took some time. I assume this fire is going to be even more costly for our local governments. But we'll see.
We'll see, and I'm sure you'll be reporting on it. We're out of time here. We've been talking with Matt Ward with the Millard County Chronicle Progress. Matt Ward, thanks for the great work you're doing, and thanks for joining us today.
Hey, no, it was great. Thank you for the invite. I appreciated the conversation.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.